complicit in his crimes. Warm welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. More Palestinians have lost their lives as Israel carries out new airstrikes on Gaza. That's despite the regime's expected truce agreement with the Palestinian resistance movement to pause the war on the besieged Strip. Regime forces struck Abu Iskandar, an area in the close proximity to Indonesia Hospital in northern Gaza. Multiple strikes were also reported elsewhere in central and the southern areas of the Strip. Palestinian health officials say the Indonesian hospital was evacuated after Israel's four-hour ultimatum. At Al-Shifa Hospital, Israeli forces arrested several medical personnel, including the facility's director. Since the beginning of the Israeli onslaught on Gaza, more than 14,500 Palestinians have been killed, most of them women and children. On Wednesday, the warring sides agreed to a four-day truce mediated by Qatar and Egypt, but it has not gone into effect.
The agreement will last for 4 days after it takes effect. Israel will suspend its military actions in Gaza. During the truce, the Israeli regime is committed not to abduct anyone all across the besieged territory. Palestinians will be free to move from northern to southern Gaza via Salah ad-Din Road. Also, according to the deal, air traffic will completely stop during the 4-day ceasefire in the southern Gaza Strip. In the north, however, air traffic will stop daily for 6 hours from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Hamas says it will release 50 Israeli captives in exchange for the freedom of 150 Palestinian women and children held in Israeli jails. Last but not least, hundreds of trucks of humanitarian aid, including fuel and medicine, will be given access to all areas of the Gaza Strip.
The temporary ceasefire was expected to start on Thursday, but the Israeli regime says the truce that includes a prisoner swap will not start until at least Friday. The deal was clinched despite a fierce opposition from the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's far-right cabinet. However, Netanyahu backed the agreement while vowing to continue the genocidal onslaught on Gaza. Since the beginning of the Israeli onslaught against Palestinians on October the 7th, the regime has sought to destroy the resistance groups there. However, Palestinians' resistance turned the Gaza Strip into a quagmire for Israeli troops, forcing the regime to redefine its objectives. Here are the main objectives that Israel has been pursuing in its war in Gaza.
Israeli officials repeatedly stated the destruction of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas as their main objective by targeting the group's military infrastructure. However, since day one, Hamas has been a thorn in the eye of the occupation regime as resistance fighters continued their retaliatory attacks on Israeli targets. Therefore, the regime has failed to achieve its main goals.
The head of the UN Children's Agency calls the besieged Gaza Strip, quote, the most dangerous place in the world to be a child. While briefing the UN Security Council virtually, Catherine Russell also said that even the truce deal between Israel and Hamas is not enough to save the Palestinian children.
Today, the Gaza Strip is the most dangerous place in the world to be a child. No place is safe in the Gaza Strip, and the proposed zones do not have the infrastructure or protection measures in place to meet the needs of such large numbers of civilians. We are particularly concerned by reports of increasing numbers of displaced children who have been separated from their families along evacuation corridors to the south, or who are otherwise arriving unaccompanied to hospitals for medical care. These children are especially vulnerable, and they urgently need to be identified, provided with temporary care, and given access to family tracing and reunification services.
One more Palestinian has been killed and another injured in yet another Israeli raid on the occupied West Bank city of Nablus. The regime's forces, backed by armored vehicles, entered the Balata refugee camp overnight and clashed with the locals. The director of the emergency service of the Palestinian Red Crescent said the Israeli troops resorted to live fire and shot two young Palestinians protesting against the incursion. One of the injured, identified as Izzaddin Mustafa Hafi, later succumbed to injuries. The Red Crescent officials said the Israeli forces detained some of its emergency crews and snatched their keys and phones. According to local sources, the Israeli military also raided the Jaffa Cultural Center in Nablus and deployed troops in the area. Since the onset of the Gaza war, the Israeli forces have killed some 210 Palestinians and detained hundreds more in the West Bank. Our Ramallah correspondent Monica Ndil has interviewed some Palestinians in the occupied West Bank on Israel's readiness for a temporary ceasefire in Gaza. Let's take a listen to the reactions.
The resistance, its heroism and its steadfastness forced the Nazis' Israeli occupation to sign this deal. We consider it a victory for the resistance because all international laws give Palestinians the right to fight against the occupiers. We Palestinians reject labeling the resistance as ISIS. We are a national liberation movement, just like other movements in history that resisted against colonialism and occupation.
This deal is an achievement of the resistance, mainly because there will be a four-day ceasefire. However, the danger lies in the Israeli regime's insistence that it will go on with the genocidal campaign. This means we have to intensify our efforts to stop the war crimes. For this, we have to take this occupying and colonial regime to International Criminal Court, as well as boycott Israel.
This deal should have been reached earlier to avoid more bloodshed and destruction. But I guess the delay was due to internal Israeli situation and Netanyahu himself, who was accused of failure. Netanyahu was doing his utmost to continue the war as if it was his personal issue. But he signed this deal amid constant pressure from the families of the captives held by Hamas.
We are thankful to the resistance and proud of Hamas fighters for what they have done, which could take years to achieve. We are happy and proud of them.
We believe that all Palestinian political prisoners have to be freed, especially the women and children. We know that since October 7th there has been an escalation, an increase in a mass arrest wave for people without any charges, without any trial, under the so-called administrative detention, which is a cruel tool, holding Palestinians for an indefinite period of time without any charges, without any trial. We know that since October 7th as well, Palestinian prisoners have been facing widespread torture and ill treatment. It's very alarming. It's very dangerous. We have little information about what's going on inside Israeli prisons.
Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement says that it has carried out several strikes against Israel's military sites in response to the regime's brutal aggression against Gaza. Hezbollah said it targeted the positions of Israeli soldiers and vehicles in Al-Rahab near Lebanon's southern border with Burkan rockets, causing casualties. The movement also targeted several Israeli posts in Bayat Bleda, as well as other military targets, including a number of Israeli barracks with appropriate weapons. Meanwhile, Israeli warplanes raided a number of areas in southern Lebanon, including the village of Beit Yahoun. According to a statement by Hezbollah, the strike killed five members of the movement, including the son of the head of Hezbollah's parliamentary bloc, Mohammad Raad. Iran's foreign minister, who is on an official visit to Lebanon, has met with the secretary general of the Hezbollah resistance movement to discuss regional developments, including the war in Gaza. Hossein Amir Abdullahian and Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah exchanged views on the ongoing efforts to stop Israel's barbaric attacks on Gaza and other scenarios. They stressed that it is the responsibility of all Muslims to support the issue of Palestine. Amir Abdullahian highlighted Iran's recent diplomatic efforts to help Palestinians and stop Israel's war crimes in Gaza. He said a humanitarian ceasefire and agreement on prisoners' exchange are the result of resistance and the resilience of Palestinians and the helplessness of the Israeli regime. The Hezbollah chief, for his part, pointed to the firmness of Palestinian resistance fighters. He emphasized the need for complete readiness on various fronts, saying the final victory of resistance and the defeat of the Zionist regime are imminent. Iran's president says without the Western help, there could not be an entity called Israel after the Operation Al-Aqsa flood.
If it weren't for Western aid, global arrogance, and Western countries, you wouldn't see anything called the Zionist regime now. Everyone has admitted that the Zionist regime had military and intelligence failure, and in fact, it collapsed.
Ibrahim Raisi said even Israel's Western backers confirmed the collapse of the regime after the operation launched by the Palestinian resistance movement. He made the remarks during a gathering of besieged volunteer forces in Tehran. Raisi said Palestine is definitely the winner in the war on Gaza. He said the Israeli regime has failed to achieve its intended goals in Gaza. Iran's president stressed that the only thing the regime has gained is global hatred toward it. Raisi also said that Israel's killing of innocent children is not a sign of victory, but merely shows the regime's desperation. In an extraordinary and heroic move, the Yemeni armed forces seized an Israeli cargo ship in the Red Sea on Sunday, response to the regime's deadly aggression against Gaza. The correspondent for Iran's Arabic news channel, Al Alam, has visited the detained ship in a Yemeni port and has filed this report.
Docking off the Israeli ship, Galaxy Leader, off the coast of Yemen, or even crossing the Red Sea, is not welcome unless mandatory with an invitation. The seizure of ship is in line with this narrative, and the Yemeni forces did it remarkably, displaying support for the Palestinian cause.
I'm standing on the deck of Galaxy Leader, an Israeli ship that was seized by Yemen's naval forces. They did this to help our brother in Palestine and to support the Islamic Jihad and other Palestinian resistance movements which are fighting against the tyranny and global arrogance in Israel. This is the first time we stopped this Israeli ship. Through this, we send a message to friends and enemies that the Yemeni naval forces are ready to help our brothers in Gaza with all available means, and they would also make futile any move against the Yemenis.
Yemen's operation that was carried out a few days after the leader's Abdul Malik al-Houthi's speech regarding the constant monitoring of Israeli ships revealed the weakness of the regime's intelligence system once again after the Al-Aqsa flawed operation. This operation will continue in the depth of the Red Sea until the regime's attack on Gaza stops.
All Israeli ships will remain the main target of the Yemeni naval forces, and this was only a successful beginning that God has promised to the oppressed, and the Israeli ship exactly fell into the hands of the oppressed.
We are standing on the deck of Galaxy Leader, the first Israeli ship we've seized in defense of our Palestinian brothers. This is not the only ship, and others will follow. We will continue this operation until the attacks on our Palestinian brothers are stopped.
Despite the great shock inflicted on the enemies and the pain of the indifference of the Arab world toward Gaza, Palestinians whose words and actions are the same are more valuable to us than anything. The message Yemen wanted to convey to the Israeli regime, the U.S. and their backers, is crystal and clear. We support Palestinians from the air and the sea and are aligned with the resistance fighters for whatever they do in the coming days to defend Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Our correspondent in Kabul, Rahmatullah Bakhman, has talked to some Afghan citizens about Israel's brutal war on the besieged Gaza Strip.
Israel has committed a great genocide and big sin against the Palestinian children, women, and others.
Palestinians expect Afghans to stand by their side in the face of aggression and practically support them. They expect more than announcement and condemnation. When the Taliban claim that they have brought a completely Islamic government, they should provide the ground for more support for Palestine. Silence and staying neutral in the situation is a big sin, and we have to answer in the hereafter.
Israel has massacred thousands of innocent women and children in Gaza. This happened with the support of Western countries like France, the U.S., the U.K., and Germany. They always talk about human rights and justice, but now they are violating all human rights and norms in Gaza. They must be held accountable, and there should be a sustainable ceasefire.
It is the responsibility of all Muslims and Islamic countries to stay firm and resolute in their support for oppressed Palestinians. Shame on sub-Arab countries who are obeying the West and remain silent while their brothers are killed by the Zionist regime. We Muslims must wake up and defend Al-Aqsa Mosque, for it is our first Qibla and Palestine belongs to all Muslims.
Relatives of Gaza families under Israeli siege have met Italian and international journalists during a press conference held in the Vatican City. The meeting has taken place after an encounter with Pope Francis.
On Wednesday, Palestinians living through the ongoing Israeli brutal assault in the Gaza Strip met with the head of the Catholic Church, Pope Francis, on the sidelines of a general audience held in St. Peter's Square at the Vatican. The Palestinian delegation was composed of 10 people with relatives in Gaza and in the West Bank and included Muslims and Christians. Pope Francis turned his thoughts to those suffering in the conflict, describing what is happening in the Holy Land as, quote, terrorism, not war. After meeting with the pontiff, family members of Palestinians living in Gaza held a press conference in the Paul VI hall, during which they spoke out the pain.
200 complete families have been wiped out from the civil register. This is with the threat of lack of water, lack of food, lack of security, etc. This has one meaning. These people are asked to move out from their places using power. This is genocide.
Before, we used to talk about, you know, hopes and recognition of a state and all these things that we really hope for. But at this point, I mean, what's happening in Gaza is a catastrophe. And the catastrophe, we are even worried what's going to happen later on after war is finished. And when it stops, the first thing we want to think of, you know, 1,300,000 are displaced with no homes.
Since the start of the aggression, Tel Aviv has killed over 14,500 Palestinians, including nearly 6,000 children and almost 4,000 women, injuring at least 33,000 others, according to the Hamas-run health ministry in the Gaza Strip. Over the past weeks, the Italian government, as well as opposition lawmakers, have been voicing support for placing a United Nations peacekeeping force in the Gaza Strip in an alleged attempt to ensure stability in the region. However, many believe this measure alone would only result in an umpteenth temporary patchy solution to the conflict.
If we, at the end, in cooperation with the international community, if the leadership would accept the international protection, it would be part of an overall plan with a clear roadmap, with an end game to end the Israeli aggression and occupation and to reach to our dignity, our statehood, as exactly the world promised us.
International organizations have also called for states that are party to the Geneva Conventions to fulfill their obligations to ensure respect for the Fourth Geneva Convention by acting collectively to prevent further violations, particularly in the Gaza Strip. Max Civili, Rome.
With that, we come to an end for this edition of World News. Thanks for being with us. It's bye-bye for now.
What about you? IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The issue of Palestine is the first issue of the world of Islam, by Ayatollah Khamenei. Palestine is the land that extends from the river to the sea, not one inch less than that. Of course, it should be noted that through its elected government, the Palestinian people will run the affairs of any part of the Palestinian soil they manage to liberate, just as they did in the case of Gaza. But they will never forget the ultimate goal. The second point is that in order to reach this lofty goal, what is necessary is action, not words. It is necessary to be serious, not to make ceremonial gestures. it is necessary to have patience and wisdom, not engage in a variety of impatient actions. It is necessary to consider horizons that lie far ahead and to move forward step by step with determination, reliance on God, and hope.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
One of the goals of the Islamic Revolution is the liberation of Palestine. October 1st, 2011. Our magnanimous Imam announced that one of the goals of the revolution was to liberate Palestine and to remove the cancerous tumor, Israel. The powerful waves of this revolution, which engulfed the entire world at that time, conveyed this message wherever it reached. Palestine must be liberated. Even the repeated and great problems that the enemies of the revolution imposed on the Islamic Republic of Iran failed to discourage the Islamic Republic from defending Palestine. One instance of the problems that they caused was the 8-year war waged on Iran by Saddam Hussein, who had been goaded by America and England and was supported by reactionary Arab governments. Thus, new blood was pumped into the veins of Palestine. Muslim Mujahid groups started to emerge in Palestine. The Lebanese resistance formed a powerful and a new front against the enemy and its supporters. Instead of relying on Arab governments and seeking help from global organizations such as the United Nations, which were accomplices of the arrogant powers, Palestine started to rely on itself, its youth, its deep Islamic faith, and its selfless men and women. This is the key to all achievements.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
As the world is watching a genocide unfolding in the Gaza Strip, another massacre is taking place against the Palestinian people in the occupied West Bank. Since the Israeli offensive began on the Gaza Strip on October 7, the violence against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank has also escalated. Israeli forces have killed dozens of Palestinians there. The Israelis have cut off Palestinian villages and cities from one another by closures and settler attacks. That has resulted in a near standstill of commercial activities of Palestinians and their movements. Furthermore, armed settlers backed by regime troops have blocked entrances to most Palestinian villages, towns, and cities through military checkpoints, earth mounds, cement blocks, and iron gates. During the current offensive, the rate of violence practiced by settlers against Palestinians has escalated, That includes preventing them from accessing their lands, attacking them while picking olives, expelling them from their fields, and harassing Palestinian moving on roads.
We used to have problems with the settlers, but after the war in Gaza, they want to kill all of us.
After the war, the situation changed. They started attacking our houses. They didn't used to come to our houses. They started attacking them and the people inside them.
Preventing access to water and food needs, especially in the herding communities, is done by Israel with the aim of displacing the Palestinian communities in those areas.
We have the same occupation and we are the same people. Geography does not, you know, divide people. We are just the same. We are all targets. Whenever you are a Palestinian, you are a terrorist and you should be killed. People are killed for no reason and for nothing. So, you know, this is complete genocide. This is complete war crimes that should be stopped immediately, right now.
Just days ago, Jordan warned against Israel's plans to displace Palestinians living in the occupied West Bank to the Arab Kingdom, saying that Amman would consider the move, quote, a declaration of war. The warning refers to a decades-old plan dating back to before the creation of Israel in 1948. This transfer plan, originally formulated by Zionist militias operating in Palestine and then endorsed by the regime after its creation, calls for mass expulsion of Palestinians to Egypt's Sinai Desert. After Israel's occupation of the West Bank in 1967, the idea of pushing Palestinians towards Jordan became included in the transfer plan.
There's also been a sharp increase in settler violence and takeover of land across the West Bank. Since 7 October, nearly 1,000 Palestinians from at least 15 herding communities have been forced from their homes. In the context of the coercive environment they live in, the displacement of these communities may amount to the forcible transfer of a population, which is a grave breach of the Fourth Geneva Convention.
Before the start of Israel's genocidal war on the Gaza Strip, the occupied West Bank was already witnessing the deadliest year on record for Palestinians. The worsening violence in the West Bank has fueled concerns that the Palestinian territory could become a third front in a wider war, in addition to the regime's northern separation line, where clashes with Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah have taken place. Over the past 4 weeks, Israeli forces have raided Palestinian territories in the occupied West Bank in a bid to quell a rising resistance against the regime there. The Jenin refugee camp in the West Bank has now turned into a hotbed for resistance against Israel. The Jenin camp, with its high population density, narrow space, and adjacent homes, is very similar to the Gaza Strip. Hundreds of Palestinian fighters present a significant challenge to Israel's aim of destroying the military and political capabilities of resistance groups there. Israeli attacks on Jenin and Tulkarm are aimed at ending the resistance in the northern occupied West Bank so that it does not extend to the other cities. The regime has destroyed roads leading to vital institutions and centers that citizens need in their daily lives in those areas. The attacks on the northern West Bank are aimed at ensuring any future arrangements within Israel's vision of expanding settlements. But the October 7th resistance operation against the Israeli regime has proven that the regime cannot protect settlers.
The Israeli occupation policy today is that you need to accept being killed by the Israeli soldiers and the Israeli settlers without speaking. It is a gag order. They don't want the victim to speak up. They don't want the victim to condemn their murder of the victim itself. So that is the policy of the Israeli occupation, colonial, dictator regime.
The Israeli carnage in the Gaza Strip continues to rack up deaths, especially women and children. But Israel is also impacted by its genocidal war when it comes to its international standing, putting into doubt its legitimacy. Ireland's opposition party has strongly blasted the regime, accusing it of committing barbaric and cowardly war crimes.
The world sees Israeli actions for what they are: barbaric, hateful, cowardly war crimes.
strong words from the leader of Ireland's opposition party. The Brazilian president relayed his disgust on Israeli crimes when it came to hospitals being targeted.
I'd never heard of children being the preferred victims of a war. The number of women and children who have already died and the number of children who have gone missing is unheard of in any other war.
Hospitals have become a focal point of the war. The Israeli military shared video and photographs showing what it said were weapons stored by Hamas in the basement of a children's hospital in Gaza, where it also said hostages appear to have been held.
And we also found signs that indicate that Hamas held hostages here. This is currently under our investigation, but we also have intelligence that verifies it.
Currently under our investigation is another way of Israel saying that it is not sure. At the same time, it is trying to portray itself as a good Samaritan by delivering fuel to the hospitals. But this amount of fuel is just a drop in the bucket, way too short of what hospitals need. Yet Israel got a boost on its war efforts when the U.S. President Joe Biden said that hospitals in the Gaza Strip must be protected.
Well, I have not been reluctant in expressing my concerns what's going on. And it's my hope and expectation that there will be less intrusive action relative to the hospital.
Biden said he was hoping for less intrusive action by Israel. That was another way of saying that he supported Israel's military operation against the hospitals. The more Israel's genocidal war in the Gaza Strip continues, the more it will come at a cost for Israel and its supporters. The Israeli foreign minister gave his idea of a timeline of when the war may end. He said that Israel has between 2 and 3 weeks left before international pressure intensifies.
Ceasefire now!
Before it intensifies? By many accounts, that threshold has been passed already, evident through the mass worldwide protests. But the real question remains, what are Israel's plans for Palestinians? A host of Israeli officials have made statements recently which reveal what those plans may be. Israeli Minister Smotrich said on X that he supports voluntary migration of Palestinians in Gaza as the right humanitarian solution. Dani Danan, former ambassador to the UN, and Ram Bin Barak, former deputy director of the Mossad, published a commentary in the Wall Street Journal suggesting moving some people of Gaza to nations that will accept them. And the former director of Israel's spy agency, Shin Bet, who is currently serving as the Minister of Agriculture, said that Tel Aviv was rolling out a Nakba in the Gaza Strip. Let's not forget, Israel has denied that a Nakba ever took place. Furthermore, in 2011, Israel enacted a Nakba law that authorized the withdrawal of state funds from organizations that discussed the Nakba.
An Israeli minister has claimed that dropping a nuclear bomb on the blockaded Gaza Strip is an option. The Israeli Heritage Minister Eliyahu made the remarks in an interview with Radio Kol Barama. Eliyahu also insisted that allowing any humanitarian aid into Gaza was wrong, claiming there is no such thing as uninvolved civilians in Gaza, calling the innocent civilian population in Gaza Nazis. Following the remarks, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu suspended the minister from cabinet meetings. Hamas resistance movement, however, pointed out that Eliyahu's remarks were reflective of the Netanyahu regime's genocidal mindset.
The statement by what is called the Israeli Heritage Minister in the Zionist cabinet that throwing a nuclear weapon on the Gaza Strip is one of the solutions didn't come out of nowhere, but it is an expression on the level of decadence, Nazism and sadism that takes place in the minds of the cabinet of the occupying entity that is based on murder and genocide.
The remarks also drew condemnation from around the Arab world, and Iran called for a swift international response. The United Nations Security Council and the International Atomic Energy Agency must take immediate and uninterrupted action to disarm this barbaric and apartheid regime. Russia has joined a chorus of condemnation that was sparked over controversial remarks made by an Israeli minister about the regime's openness to a nuclear strike in the Gaza Strip. Maria Zakharova, Russia's foreign ministry spokeswoman, said that the main issue was that Israel appeared to have admitted that it had nuclear weapons. Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and other Arab states have all denounced the comments. Arab League Secretary General Ahmed Abolteit has said the remarks revealed that Israel possesses nuclear weapons, which is an open secret. He also added that the comments also confirm the truth of the racist view Israelis hold against Palestinians.
Israeli forces raid Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City, the largest medical complex in the Strip, where thousands have taken shelter. The spokesman for the Ministry of Health in Gaza has said that there are only doctors, patients, and displaced people inside Al-Shifa Hospital. Regime troops entered the hospital's emergency department building while tanks surrounded the medical complex. The Israeli military said it is conducting the operation in a cult specific area. Hamas resistance movement has said that Israel's leaders and the U.S. presidents were fully responsible for the consequences of the regime's raid on Shifa Hospital. Al-Shifa has been denied urgently needed supplies of medicines and fuel. Fuel shortages threaten the function of generators which run vital equipment like ventilators and dialysis machines. The World Health Organization has described the situation of the hospital as dire and perilous. The hospital's last generator has also run out of fuel, which has led to the death of several premature babies and wounded patients.
I am standing here at the ICU at Al-Shifa Medical Complex. This department is suffering after the shutdown of electricity due to lack of fuel. The health ministry warned about the lack of fuel. These people here were denied life support devices. They may lose their lives because there are no support machines or artificial respiration devices. Around 29 patients are facing this tragedy.
Israel alleges that Hamas has built its headquarters in bunkers and tunnels under the Al-Shifa Hospital, a claim rejected by the Palestinian resistance movement and hospital staff. Shifa Hospital has been one of the main targets of Israeli strikes since the regime began its deadly onslaught on Gaza. The situation remains tense in other hospitals as well.
And you are asking doctors and nurses to move people, knowing that that would kill them. And again, why would you need to move them? A hospital should never be under attack. A hospital is a place, a safe haven. This is agreed under international humanitarian law.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
The Last Savior.
Oh, the Savior of mankind, please show us the sign. to the designer of the human civilization that is established on the unity of Almighty Allah. To the redeemer of human volition and thought.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is The Last Savior from IRIB English Radio. I'm Mustafa as your host, and with me is Brother Alavi in the studio. He has a PhD in philosophy and is an Islamic researcher. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
How are you doing?
Thank you very much, and thanks for inviting me to your show.
Thank you so much. We talk about our duties towards the 12th Imam during his ghaybat, his occultation. May Allah hasten his reappearance. And I felt there were a few questions left over from the last episode, and we were discussing the need of referring to the Walayat al-Faqih or the Supreme Jurist during the occultation, right? A few questions that remain in my mind, I would say, is that theoretically, yes, it makes sense that we need to refer to someone who's the most just, but I don't know how practically it's difficult to put that into practice, right? I think a lot of that has to do with just the way countries are set up, the way governments are set up, the way the justice system is set up. We're living in Iran, and it's easier for us to be able to, for example, connect to the Walayat al-Faqih and the system. What if there's someone who's listening to the show outside Iran? How do they manage that connection? You explained that, yes, they can go to the sort of representative. But would you say there's more? Is there anything else they can do, you know, to learn more about the system?
If you remember in one of our shows that we have been talking about the kind of way that Imam Mahdi alayhi salam at the time of his advent is going to lead the whole world and universe, he said a part of it is spiritual communication, spiritual connection that he has with the people. And we give the example, and we said that at the time of the late Imam Khomeini, even there were some people who went to the fronts, to the battlefront to fight for the Islamic Ummah, and they didn't see Imam at the time of this current Imam, Imam Khomeini. Also, there are some people in different parts of the world that they have not yet even seen him, but they know and they are familiar with his, actually, his decrees, with his risala and with his viewpoints, and they know him well. I mean, they have a good communication, and they can find their answers in case wherever they are living. I mean, they can have contact and find their solutions and refer to him. To talk about the reliability of this source, actually, we said that we are taking it from the explanation, from the verses of the Holy Quran, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that you need to refer to Allah and the Holy Prophet to solve your issues and solve your problems. At the time of absence of the prophets, the successors of the prophets are the ones who are going to solve the issues. That is the imams. So at the time of the absence of imam, the occultation of them, that we are afflicted with, and this our time that we are. So there is no option, again, just to refer to a person, as Imam Ali Salam himself said, Imam Mahdi Ali Salam said, فَارْجَعُوا لَا رُوَةَ أَحَدِيثَنَا. Refer to those who are narrating from us, but with these characteristics. Those who are against their hawa, their own desires, and they are just for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, issue a decree or something. Again, it's not something that even happened at the time of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, at the time of his occultation. Even at the time of Imam Sadiq, a person referred to Imam Sadiq alayhi salam and asked him to, whom should we follow at the time that we don't have access to you? Imam said, اجعلوا بينكم رجلا ممن قد عرف حلالنا وحرامنا فأني قد جعلته قاضيا. That is, find a person among yourself who deeply believes in whatever we announce as halal and haram, lawful and unlawful, and who deeply knows these knowledges and have, and I appoint him as a, let's say, judge among you to issue orders and to give orders to you, right? So this is the framework that we have been given. I mean, at the time of occultation of Imam Ali Salam, even there is no deadlock for us. So there is always an opening. Because we have a person to extract Islamic laws from, based on the knowledge of jurisprudence that he has, and to give decrees to us, even the same way that Imam Ali Ali Salam, for example, put khums or put zakat at, for example, horses at the time that he was in need of, right? So he had a guardianship over the people, any change in the rules due to this guardianship that he had. So the same way it is going to be transmitted to the person who is going to be representing the Imam alayhi salam at the time of cultation.
We'll have to go for a break, and we'll come back. I'll have maybe another question for you then related to this.
Hopefully, inshallah.
I can feel your eyes like the sun shining behind the clouds. I need a morning to shatter this long night forever. I need a hero to stop this thousand-year-old
So we're back from the break, and you were explaining, I guess, the question that I had asked is, you know, how can we sort of establish that relationship with the Wilayat al-Faqih, with the Supreme Jurist? As we're saying, that's necessary for us to do so during this time.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to add maybe from my own experience is that when I was living outside of Iran, one thing that we used to do is we used to, for example, just read the speeches that Ayatollah Khamenei has given. We used to read the books, because these days, how long does it take for things to get translated? Well, like 2 days, you know, you have the speech available. We're not living like 1400 years ago where there was no communication and you couldn't
very
connect
true.
To anyone.
Yeah.
It's not that difficult to establish that connection, I think, regardless of where you're living, because of how easy it is because of communication, right?
Yeah, true.
Would you like to add any final thoughts to this?
Yeah, I want to say that this topic? Concept of Wilayat al-Faqih is not something new in Shia, in the school of Ahlul Bayt.
Yes.
It has been in the course of history from the beginning of occultation of Imam till today. Even in the past, we have seen that the late Ayatollah Mirza Shirazi, when he saw that the economy of country is going to be at the hand of the British government, he issued a fatwa against smoking.
Right.
And he announced it as haram at that
right.
time. And that was the reason that he actually stood in front of, let's say, an oppressing government to milk the economy of a Muslim
yes.
government and Muslim nation, right? So this essence was available, and it's not something new. So it
right.
people actually were following a wali al-faqih, a person who represents imam, or it represents the school of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, to follow. The same way happened at the time of the late Imam Khomeini rahmatullah, at the time that he asked all the soldiers to leave army bases and join the revolutionary people.
Uh-huh.
So due to this velay, or let's say guardianship order or fatwa that he decreed, all the people, all the soldiers came and joined the nation, and revolution happened. So I want to say that it has quite a logical base. I mean, it's not something mm. that came from the sky. Because for implementation of the rules of God on the scene of the earth, we need an executive power.
Right.
And it has to be at the hand of al-faqih at the time of occultation.
Definitely. And I think if we study history, if we study current events, we can see that the value of having these leaders and ulama, they've saved us time and time again from many, many disasters, right?
Yeah.
I think we really should. I think sometimes we even take them for granted. Like, we just think they're just there. You know, there's these old people that, no, like, they've saved our lives countless times, and we owe our lives to them. Okay, so we're back from the break, and we've been discussing the necessity of referring, or, you know, learning from the Supreme Jurist, the Wilayat al-Faqih, and the necessity of that during the ghaybah, the occultation of our 12th Imam, correct?
Yeah.
And we've discussed different questions. My question would be, the next question that I would have for you is that, let's say there's someone who doesn't accept this notion. He says, no, I'm only going to accept, for example, someone who's infallible, who's a ma'asum,
yeah.
right? That's a common thought that people have. How do we respond to that? How do we respond to that challenge that because I don't think that necessarily there's a conflict between the two, right? Mm-hmm. But maybe you can also help us understand why that's the case.
This is a very good question, brother. Okay. Look, we said that one of the missions of the prophets of God and messengers of God was to establish justice, social justice, right? And we said that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala tells us, refer to Allah and refer to the Holy Prophet and refer to the Imams. Even we have indirectly, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala refers to the ones who are in this state of ruku and they give zakat. Yes. So it refers to Imam Ali alayhi salam, and all the Mufassirin and interpreters of the Holy Quran said that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it means a hierarchy is already there. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Holy Prophet, and Imams after him. So okay, we need to refer them. So suppose that we don't have access to Imam at the time of occultation. What then does intellect and mind tells us? Or do we need a government to establish this justice? Or it goes through a chaos by itself?
I mean, to what extent then, I guess my question would be that, because where the question is coming from, is the Walayat equal? Are they equal to the Imam? Because, you know, they're not Muslim. Yeah,
it's,
right?
It's in continuation because, like, this is what Imam Ali Islam says. I mean, the Walaya of Faqih is based on what Imam himself said. If we believe in the same Imam said, okay, refer to the person who has this knowledge based, has this characteristics. Okay, you might say, okay, the example of this Walifari might not be this person. So this is not the discussion, right?
Okay.
So if you believe in this, what Imam said, that while you don't have access to us, it happened at the time of Imam Hadi, it happened at the time of Imam Jawad. They sent some deputies and they didn't have contact with people very easily. Mm-hmm. You see, due to many circumstances, some of them were purposely actually engineered. Right. And some of them have been due to the, let's say, limitations that they had at that time, right? So we want to say about the necessity of this to refer to somebody who is going to lead the Islamic government or the Islamic Ummah. Right. Do you think that without any society, without any government, can this order and discipline come and happen?
Of course not.
So definitely we need order, we need discipline.
And even in practice.
So who is going to lead this society then? Let's talk about the leadership of this government.
Right, and I'm saying in practice, we're seeing that the people that are leading governments, they're not exactly good people in many countries, right?
Yeah.
And we have a history now of, for example, Iran, where we have had a supreme jurist who's in a leading position. And we can see the results, the positive results of that in mm-hmm. society. Just today, we were discussing in class how safe Iran has become compared to
historically. We are seeing the output of this government being led by, let's say, Wali al-Faqih for decades. And let's compare it to other governments, other areas that were not under any sanctions, embargoes, and under hardships. You see, which one is more progressed, more developed?
Right.
Comparing to the governments in our vicinity first,
definitely,
then to other governments or the other areas that are far from us. So we see the output is quite clear.
Yes. Thank you so much. I think that I hope this discussion really helped explain to people why it's necessary for us to refer to the Supreme Jurist. For me, it's when it started to make sense was when it became logical, you know, when it became logical to me that I need to refer to someone who's expert, who do well in that position. Yes. Nobody wants an incompetent person to lead them, right? You want someone who's capable and experienced. And I think it makes a lot of sense. If it doesn't, please go and read books, study. It will make sense to you.
I want to add one more point
before we wrap it up.
I mean, I think we need to think on its rationality or the intellectuality of this reasoning.
Right.
We want to say that if we are after, all human beings are after, as I said, social justice, discipline, order. So how can it happen? That's it.
Right.
Let's find a solution for that.
Right. We're trying to make that happen. Inshallah, and we all pray for the return of the 12th Imam, for who we're doing all this for him. We're doing for his return.
Definitely.
So please join us for other discussions. If you enjoyed listening to this one, take care. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Where is the rising sun? Where is the spring of life? Where is the shining moon? Where is the firmest glow? Please, oh please.
This is Gaza Under Attack, coming to you from the British capital, London. I'm Saeed Pourreza with you for some of the biggest talking points coming out of the ongoing slaughter of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip and beyond. Israel is escalating its attacks across the Gaza Strip. Israeli strikes have targeted Gaza's Indonesian hospital, where thousands are seeking refuge. At least 12 Palestinians have been killed there. Staff at the Indonesian hospital are appealing for urgent intervention from the UN and the Red Cross. Also, an Israeli attack on a residential building in Gaza's southern city of Rafah has killed at least 14 people. Gaza's health ministry director has dismissed Israel's claims that it had found a Hamas tunnel at the Al-Shifa hospital, describing it as a pure lie. Meantime, no calls for a ceasefire from Israel's allies, chiefly the United States. Here in the UK, a Scottish nationalist movement motion calling for an immediate ceasefire was voted down in the House of Commons this past week, leading to some opposition MPs resigning their front bench positions in protest. Meanwhile, national pro-Palestine protests are ongoing. The next one here in London is planned for November 25th. We'll be discussing the latest from Israel's war on the Palestinians and whether or not apartheid Israel has reached a tipping point, just like apartheid South Africa did in the 80s before coming to an end in the early 1990s. And joining me for the conversation in the studio, Dr. Matthew Alford, an author, filmmaker, and lecturer of politics, languages, and international studies at the University of Bath here in the UK, and via Skype from Dublin, Mohammed Desai, director of Africa for Palestine, the continent's largest Palestine solidarity human rights organization, and co-founder of Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions South Africa. Mohammed, of course, wears many other hats. He is in Dublin, but he's based in South Africa. Welcome to you both. Let me start with you. Matthew, well, this is now the second month of the Israeli bombardment of the Gaza Strip and, of course, the killings that are going on in the West Bank. Your reflections so far?
Well, my reflections are that it is not just a major humanitarian disaster, but also a very significant geopolitical issue, which is going to have ramifications for years, if not decades, to come. I think it's interesting and perhaps even encouraging that there is a huge backlash to what Israel is doing and a huge cry for peace. Even in my own home city of Bath, which is a very small-C conservative Lib Dem city, for the first time in 10 years, for the first time since the Occupy movement, if you remember that, yeah. The anti-Wall Street movement, for the first time in 10 years, there were protests on the street just a couple of days ago, which I joined, which were peace protests that were opposed to all forms of terrorism. They were quite popular in the centre of Bath. So I think that however horrible this is, we should hold on to the possibility of a peaceful and beneficial outcome eventually.
Let me put the same question to Mohammed. 2 months of incessant bombings and shelling, a ground invasion, thousands of people dead. Your thoughts?
I think that one of the most tragic, but also one of the most apt descriptions of what we are seeing has been described by one of the medical personnel in the Gaza Strip, a medical personnel actually from the United States, who described it as an avalanche of human suffering and devastation. I think that this is what we are seeing on the one hand, the Palestinians experiencing, but on the other hand, we're also seeing a certain barbaric form of cruelty being unleashed on the Palestinian people by the Israeli regime, of course, backed, supported, armed, and endorsed by the United States of America. And whilst we do have this sort of what I can only really describe as evilness being exerted and being imposed on the Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip, I think at the same time it is very encouraging to see humanity coming together, whether it's from the streets of Johannesburg, the streets of Lusaka in Zambia,